Our first case on the morning call is number 06-1719 in Re ABC NACO Incorporated and the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors of ABC NACO Incorporated. This is the appeal of the Softmart Corporation. We have arranged by leave of court to have counsel for the appellant, Mr. Carpello, to argue by speakerphone. Mr. Carpello, are you there?
Yes, I am. I am here in Philadelphia, Your Honor.
Fine, sir. Then we'll let you proceed.
I'm probably the only person in this courtroom that wishes I was there in Philadelphia with you.
Okay. Thank you. Well, good morning to the panel. Thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure and a privilege to appear in the Seventh Circuit on this case. I also wanted to thank Mr. Siddiqui and his office at Jenner & Block for not opposing the motion to conduct this by speakerphone due to some personal issues that I had. Essentially, in this case here, we represent Softmart, the appellant, in relation to a preference action brought in Chicago before Judge Weedoff. Our argument on appeal is essentially straightforward. We believe that the bankruptcy court, as the original trier of fact, made the right findings of fact, which resulted in the correct conclusions of law in the case. And we believe at trial, the critical evidence that the bankruptcy court heard in making its decision were, among other things, number one, the Meridian Rail letter, which states that Meridian desired to purchase these contracts from the debtor. Two, the contracts themselves at issue, which the bankruptcy court believed to be an integrated set of agreements meant to act in concert or companion with each other. Three, the testimony of the Softmart credit collection manager. And four, the judge's own experience in the case as sitting. He was the main judge in the case, and he had heard all prior motions in the case dealing with the debtor's sale of assets to Meridian Rail. In these cases involving new value, inevitably the debtor will never come out and say that it received new value because it would be contrary to their case, and therefore makes it usually a difficult case to prove from the creditor's side because the creditor often has to use circumstantial evidence and the debtor's own evidence or the debtor's own records to show that the estate was replenished.
Well, you know, this is Judge Rovner. The committee argues that virtually every creditor has the right to sue to collect a debt and presumably therefore forbears from exercising this right when the creditor gets paid. And they go on to say that if we were to accept your definition of new value, then the preference provisions of the bankruptcy code would essentially be nullified. So I would appreciate your response.
Yeah, and I believe that argument is incorrect and not applicable, Your Honor, because this case does not involve forbearance, and that's not the zone of interest in what happened here. And I think that the bankruptcy court didn't really mention whether or not this involved forbearance. I think what this involved was Microsoft provided to the debtor a right to use Microsoft intellectual property, and Microsoft used Softmart as its collection agent in that transaction. All the debtor received from Microsoft and Softmart was a right to use the property. It didn't actually purchase the product. And, in fact, the contracts go out of their way to say that the debtor cannot, you know, sell or assign or otherwise transfer the products or do anything with them without Microsoft's express permission. And that's why this case is different, and that's why on appeal I cited the other cases involving leases of property, whether it be real estate or intellectual property like the Discovery Zone case, because it's an asset of the creditor. In all the cases cited by the committee, it's typically lenders who have loaned money or provided some collateral and have taken back collateral from the debtor. So I think that makes the case different from what the committee is trying to argue. And inevitably, in any case, there always is some You could always argue there is some forbearance, but the question is, what did the creditor provide to the debtor, and did it replenish the estate? And here I think the bankruptcy court correctly found that the estate was replenished because, first, it needed the software to continue operations in order for it to be in a position to sell the assets, and it also wanted to transfer the software to Meridian. Whether or not it chose to do so formally or informally was not relevant or was not a pivotal factor in the judge's decision, the bankruptcy court. And that's why I think this case is different and puts it in a different context than the cases cited by the committee and the committee's argument. I don't think if this court were to reverse the decision, it would have any sort of landmark impact on the dealings between creditors and debtors and preferences to new value.
Now, the creditors, of course, argue that Section 365A requires a court order before an executory contract can be assumed, and that there was no such order. Is there anything in the bankruptcy court's order about assumption assignment of the Softmart purchase agreement?
No, there is not. And there is no bankruptcy court order which authorized the assumption and assignment of the contract, and the bankruptcy court did not make that finding at trial either. And when the case went on appeal to the district court, I believe, made a finding that the contracts were assumed and assigned by the bankruptcy court, but that is not what the bankruptcy court stated in its opinion, and that's not what happened in the bankruptcy. So it's either another error by the district court, or if it's correct, then it would require a reversal, or it would mean that the district court's decision was wrong. But we're not taking the position that there was any order by the bankruptcy court which formally approved the assumption and assignment. But at trial before the bankruptcy court, it was important to make the court aware of such facts, because I think that goes to the new value defense of why the debtor needed to retain use of the software. And that's why I think it was erroneous as well for the district court to not even consider the Meridian Rail letter. I don't even think that the district court opinion even mentions it. And that was probably the single most probative evidence that the bankruptcy court relied on. I'm sorry, does that answer the question?
I'm thinking.
Because I can't see you.
I know.
Well, just go ahead with your argument.
And further to the panel, I think that the other errors that were made by the district court were the district court made a finding that, Softmart was not privy to the Microsoft contracts. I believe that was a finding that was contrary to the bankruptcy court, but the district court did not cite anything to the record and did not provide any support to make that contrary finding. And the district court also made a finding that the debtor was relieved of its burden under the contract because, it sold the contracts anyway, so it did not have to pay for them. That as well, I think, is an erroneous finding, which is contrary to the record. So I think what happened here was, I think the bankruptcy understood the dynamic of the case, had a history of the case, and made the right decision. It was a very sound and practical decision, and it was supported by the facts of record.
Where did Softmart get the authority to assign the Softmart purchase agreements to Meridian in the first place?
Well, Softmart did not. There was no express assignment by the bankruptcy court of the contracts. The bankruptcy court did not enter an order at any time in the underlying debtor case that the contracts were assumed and assigned under a court order, as would be required by Section 365. And I think what the bankruptcy court was getting to was that the Softmart contract was not executory, so it probably would not have been a contract that could have been assumed and assigned, but did not need to go there in order to make its decision. Rather, the bankruptcy court viewed all three contracts as an integrated set of agreements, and that Softmart's rights were inextricably tied to Microsoft. And Microsoft had the right to terminate the licenses, and the by Microsoft allowing the debtor to retain those licenses rather than terminate for lack of payment, Microsoft and Softmart provided new value to the debtor's estate.
You have 1 minute of your time left, sir, so you might want to reserve a little bit for rebuttal.
I would like to reserve something for rebuttal. A short period of time. I think that concludes my my initial argument.
Thank you, Mr. Carapello. We'll hear now from Mr. Levenstam.
May it please the court. I agree with my opposing counsel that the assumption and assignment issue is really not a viable issue here. I think that the district court didn't really make a finding because there was no dispute before him about that. He made a mistake in writing the background facts of the case.
But the bankruptcy court authorized the assignment and assumption of the Microsoft?
That was not my understanding of what the bankruptcy judge did either. I think he found new value, and I disagree, I guess, with my opposing counsel, when it comes to the rationale. I believe he really was talking about forbearance as the basis, and really the only basis, because Mr. Byrne, who was Softmart's witness, testified clearly that after the transfers at issue, ABC received from Softmart absolutely no money, no credit, no goods, no services, nothing.
You know, your brief states virtually every lower court to address the issue has held that forbearance does not constitute new value. I was wondering whether this means that there, when you use the term virtually, that there's some court out there that does?
Well, I think the Discovery Zone case is the one questionable case, and that's a case that we disagree with, but I don't think you have to reach out and determine whether that's correct or not. It distinguished the Superior Toy Nolan matter on the basis that it was a lease and Superior Toy was not. We do not have a lease, so our case is much more like the Superior Toy case. And it's not only the lower courts. The courts of appeals that have addressed this issue have also said that forbearance is not new value, and that would be this court's energy co-op case, as well as the Second Circuit in Drabkin and the 11th Circuit in the air conditioning Stewart case.
This was a purchase, wasn't it?
Yes, this was a purchase.
And that there are quarterly payments, most of which have been made.
Right.
And so this comparison to a lease and forbearance on a lease, this is not a lease.
That's what I'm saying. This case fits in. Does not fit in with Discovery Zone in any event. We don't think Discovery Zone is correct, but that's not an issue this court needs to grapple with.
Well, what should we make of that letter from Meriden Rail to the debtor?
Well, I think what you make of it is what the uncontested testimony was. This Mr. Drexler was being presented with thousands of letters from the Meriden Company, which he was just sort of signing as a matter of convenience for them. The fact of the matter is, if you look at the Microsoft agreements, by the time this letter was signed by him, they had expired. So, you know, they both expired around 2002, a point that was made at the trial by our counsel at pages 84 and 85 of the transcript.
But, I mean, that letter asked the debtor to confirm that Meriden purchased the Microsoft licenses when it purchased the bulk of ABC NACO's assets.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
But wouldn't that mean that Meriden assumed the purchase agreement?
Well, first of all, no. The purchase agreement was non-executory, so it couldn't as a matter of law. I mean, setting aside the fact that there was no judicial order, which was required, it couldn't as a matter of law because it was non-executory. And the letter, if you read it closely, talks about the Microsoft licenses which were originally purchased from SoftMart. It does not talk about the SoftMart contract itself, which is the contract that we're talking about whether there's new value given or not.
So that's how it distinguishes between the Microsoft agreements and the SoftMart purchase agreement, in your view?
Well, yes, except underlying it all is the fact that Mr. Drexler got on the stand and testified and was not contradicted and was not impeached, that this was a mistake, that there were a raft of these letters that he was asked to sign, and he just sort of went through and signed them depending upon Meridian Rail to keep its records straight. I think really SoftMart was fortunate that it got this money from Meridian. You know, it got a $45,000 payment that is not within the contemplation of our preference agreement. So they actually made out like bandits, as it were. I mean, Meridian may have made a mistake, or they may have cut a deal. We don't know because there's nothing that was placed in the record about what was going on. The only thing in the record about this letter is Mr. Drexler, who testified that he signed it as a mistake in a stack of letters. And so I don't think it has really any legal impact or effect whatsoever. And I just want to pause briefly to talk about the this notion that the contracts are actually a single contract, because if you read the contracts, it is perfectly clear that they are not a single contract. The SoftMart purchase agreement has an integration provision, which is paragraph 15J, which says that it is the full and complete understanding of the parties relating to this subject matter. It does not incorporate the Microsoft agreements. When you look at the Microsoft agreements, they incorporate one another, but not the SoftMart purchase agreement, and they say that as the two of them together are incorporated, they are an integrated contract. So the integration clauses clearly demonstrate that they are not a single contract. The termination clauses of these contracts differ. SoftMart paragraph 13 has a simple 30-day written notice period for termination. The Microsoft agreements have a for-cause requirement and a cure period in conjunction with paragraph 11B of the master agreement discussing termination. So they're very different in that respect. And the Microsoft agreement specifically states, the master agreement, that the large account resellers are independent contractors who are dealing on their own and they can't bind Microsoft. That's paragraph 3B. So that's another indication that they are not all one contract. And the Microsoft agreements specifically contemplate that the licensee, in other words, ABC-NACO, could change large account resellers in the midst of the Microsoft life of the Microsoft agreement, and that would be fine. So here's yet another indication that clearly these are not all one agreement. And the last thing that I would note is the SoftMart purchase agreement adopts Pennsylvania law. The Microsoft agreements adopt Washington law. And when you come to a question of whether contracts are severable or put together or anything like that, those are questions of state law. Well, it seems to me beyond argument that if these agreements were supposed to be together, that they would select different states' laws as determining their interpretation and application. So we believe that although the district court may have made a mistake in reciting background facts, his analysis on the new value question, which is really the question before this court, was correct, and we request that you affirm on that basis. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Levenstam.
Yes, and this is Carapello. Mr. Carapello again for SoftMart and rebuttal.
Mr. Carapello, you have 1 minute for rebuttal, the clerk tells me.
Thank you. First, the committee's argument goes everywhere, but again, the zone of interest, and here the zone of interest is whether the estate was replenished, and SoftMart believes it was, because the bankruptcy court correctly concluded from all the evidence that the debtor had a desire to retain these contracts and needed these contracts to continue operations. And two, to finish the committee's argument, Mr. Drexler did say he signed this letter by mistake, but he went on to say the reason he signed it was by mistake because if he had known that the unsecured creditors committee was going to object to the preferences, he would not have signed it. So clearly it was a situation where he was thinking about not essentially the Meridian Rail letter, but whether they wanted to bring a preference action later in time, which I think invalidates the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carpello. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.